Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm a little nitwit, and I think Tony Kerr's the smartest man in the world. Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show. By most statistical measures, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And joining me once again on the Dog and Bone, it's Tony Kerr.
Hey.
How's it going, Tone?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks.
We're doing a Saturday morning record this week, which is unusual for us. It feels a bit different. It feels like we're on Soccer AM or something like that.
Yeah, it's got a really nice vibe already.
I've lined up a few new segments for us this week, starting with topless weather in a minute. Be launching a Save Chip campaign.
Who's Chip?
That was like a thing. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. People like held banners up, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. It really dates stuff. If you watch like Premier League clips from a very specific time around about 2001, 2002, you can see loads of Save Chip banners in the crowd. This is a landmark episode, Tone, for one reason and one reason only, just to give the listeners a peek behind the curtain here, show them a little bit how the sausage is made, how the delicious sausage is made. You're editing this one 366 episodes in, and you've finally volunteered. You've been given the controls, given the keys to the kingdom. So does this mean that you're going to be editing the next 365 episodes?
I suppose it would stand to reason.
I mean, we said right at the beginning, we'll split it evenly. I'll do the first 365, you do the next 365. That was our agreement back in 2008.
I just feel like, it's kind of like the captaincy, isn't it? I feel like it's the editing's really started to affect your performance. whereas I've been able to just kind of shoot from the hip, kind of, my sort of unbridled punditry ability has been able to flourish over the last 13 years. I feel like the editing's really started to weigh heavy on your shoulders. So yeah, I'm going to try and take that burden off you and see if you can sort of lift your game.
You've stepped in. You were worried about my well-being. You came in and put your arm around my shoulder and said, because, I've obviously been planning, hosting, editing the podcast, but you've been in that project manager role, just kind of overseeing, looking after, you've been doing the pastoral stuff, just looking after my well-being. And you finally felt, here we go, time for me to take it on. And that's, good on you, Tane. Thanks for that.
Well, life in the editing
bubble, to be honest, I think you're just fed up. You finally got fed up with the way I was editing you.
Exactly. I'm just absolutely sick to the back teeth of all my great gags being cut out. So.
Well, it is a relief, though, and it is a weight off my shoulders. But my only concern is that I'm worried that, that you might do like a sort of cassette boy style edit and make me say something stupid, like I'm a little nitwit and I think Tony Kerr's the smartest man in the world. Yeah, I don't know what it might be, but I'm worried about that.
Wait and see.
Well, anyway, we should crack on and talk about the cricket, because as ever, we have got lots to talk about tonight. Well, one major thing, really, which is the third test between India and England in Ahmedabad. It was a breakneck game of cricket, really, Tom, wasn't it? So let's dive in, because there's lots of talking points to get into here. So yeah, England's tour of India continuing, obviously, and what is turning into a pretty memorable test series took another memorable turn this week, with a day-night test, as I say, in a spanking new stadium in Ahmedabad. I used the word memorable there. So it's a memorable test series and a memorable test match. It was a pretty horrifying, really, couple of days for England fans, wasn't it, Tony? Dare I say it, for cricket fans more generally, because, yes, that's right, Graham Swann was behind the mic doing TV commentary. I think we might both have lots more to say about the commentators later. But it was also a somewhat horrifying episode on the pitch as well. I'm sure everybody's seen this, but just a very quick recap. England winning the toss and batting first were in big trouble straight away, and it didn't really get any better. They were bowled out for 112 in the first innings, with Akshar Patel continuing his sensational start to Test cricket, taking 6 for 38. India closed day one on 99 for three, lost Virat Kohli right at the end to give England a sniff that they might be able to get back in the game. And they capitalised on that sniff on the second morning, running through India with Jack Leach taking four wickets and Joe Root, of all people, taking 5 for 8. That's 5 for 8 to bowl India out for 145. So a very slender first innings lead, and England were right back in the game. But they lost Zach Crawley to the first ball, Johnny Bairstow to the third ball to be 0 for 2. And it didn't get a lot better from there. They were all out in their second innings for just 81 in 30 overs, with Akshar Patel taking another 5 wickets and Ravi Chandran Ashwin taking 4 for 48. So India with a target of just 49, and they knocked them off with no problem at all, with all 10 wickets still in hand. To wrap up, a huge victory by 10 wickets and go 2-1 up in the series. So this test finished inside 2 days. It was, about 130 overs in total, which is the shortest test match, Tone, since 1935. And I think it's worth actually kind of pausing just to think about that for a moment, because, you know, that's that kind of stat, that date's been bandied around a bit. And it's like, oh, wow, yeah, shortest test since 1935. But, you know, that's before the Second World War, you know, before Neville Chamberlain was Prime Minister, whatever, you know. It's actually crazy. You think about the number of test matches that have been played in the last, you know, in our lifetime, let alone going back that far. Yeah, that's the shortest one. So, you know, something unusual happening in this game for sure. Where do we start with this then, Tane? I feel like I've got whiplash after this. It was kind of, it was certainly blink and you'll miss it stuff, wasn't it? It was all happening very, very quickly. Test cricket on fast forward. It feels like, I say we're recording on Saturday morning, it feels like we're quite late to the party in recording this podcast, but we're actually recording on the fourth morning of the game. So, you know, that gives you some indication. So, yeah, what happened here, Tane? Give me some initial thoughts. Can you give me some sort of broad brush reaction?
God.
Very short game. What did you make of it?
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. It was extraordinary in the truest sense of the word. I agree. I don't really know where to start. I mean, if I was Channel 4, I'd probably be asking for my money back at this point. As a punter, I do feel somewhat shortchanged. I sort of got quite excited about the idea of being able to watch a match that started at 9, or where play started at 9 o'clock in the morning UK time and ran throughout the day. And yeah, obviously we only got 2 days of that. So yeah, I mean, it was quite, yeah. I mean, you couldn't really take your eyes off it, could you? I mean, there's just some of the passages of play. I mean, obviously in the end, you know, India kind of cantered in that fourth innings. You know, it was pretty frustrating that England weren't quite able to put on a score that perhaps could have made it interesting. Yeah. And obviously there were lots of reasons, lots of reasons behind that. Probably the first inning, or there were lots of places that England lost the game in, but the fact that they couldn't get a few more runs on the board in the first innings, you know, obviously everyone got quite excited, myself included, when Root started ripping through, and you thought, well, here we go, you know, we're right in this game. But obviously right at the back of the head was, well, if Joe Root's doing this, you know, what, you know, how are England's batsmen going to cope when they come back to the crease? So yeah, it was pretty frustrating to watch from an England fan's perspective, to say the least. Because you just sort of never quite felt like the hope was, or any hope that we had at any stage in the contest was kind of well placed.
Yeah, you mentioned seeing those Root wickets and thinking, well, if he's doing that, what next, kind of thing. That might be a good place to pick up. I mean, yeah, after our podcast after the second test as well, you know, we started with the pitch because all the talk was about the pitch, and it's kind of the same this time, isn't it? A lot of the talk after the game is about the pitch. Contrasting views from the captains in the post-match post-match interviews. Root kind of shied away from criticizing the pitch, but he did say that it was very difficult to bat on. He blamed more the ball than the pitch, but he did say that it was extremely difficult, you know, batting conditions. Whereas Virat Kohli said he thought it was a great pitch to bat on. There was no problems with the pitch at all. You know, very fine conditions, but just both teams batted very badly. He said it was, you know, it was a it was a failure of batting rather than any problem with the pitch. Where do you stand, Tony? How did you see it? You mentioned Joe Root taking 5 for 8. That's the second cheapest 5 for by a spinner in Test history. And it was Joe Root. I sort of feel like there must have been something going on with the pitch. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, I listened to Ather's assessment of things, and he suggested it. Possibly, obviously, it's an outlier, but it is part of the spectrum of Test wickets. I mean, it is as far this way as would be, a Boer draw where, 600 or 700 plays 600 or 700. Who am I to disagree or question the likes of Kohli and Rohit? But I don't know, for them to come out afterwards, Rohit as well was just like, you just had to work out how to score runs. Well, none of your teammates, Rohit, worked out how to score runs in there. And you included that Pujara and Kohli, and Rahane, these are elite batsmen at a world level. I didn't quite buy that. Clearly something was awry here. Whether it was the pitch, whether it was the ball, there are probably quite a lot of factors at play. I've not heard the word lacquer used so much since kind of year 7 DT. there was a lot of discussion about this ball and yet whether it did skid on a bit more off the lacquered surface.
Our DT teacher was from Northern Ireland, so we used to hear lacquer a lot. I'm a lacquer.
My memory of that kind of period of school life is that you spent like several hours a day lacquering things. I'm not sure why. Is anything lacquered these days?
It's lacquering and soldering. Those are the two things we did. We had a great education, so you can't argue
fully
with that.
Rounded. Well, maybe, if we'd be absolutely, sort of nailed on to get jobs at the SG ball manufacturing plant or whatever. I don't know. Exactly. Any match where or any innings where Joe Root is taking 5 for 8, It that says it all, really. And clearly ball, the balance was skewed too far towards ball rather than bat. And, obviously that can happen. And, a lot of Test fans would agree that the ball should have the edge probably in the balance of play to create interesting and exciting Test cricket. But it was just carnage, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the idea, of Kohli saying, it was just bad batting, really. I've seen that from a few different quarters. Peterson tweeted something along those lines, that the pitch was fine. It was just it must have just been bad batting because they kept missing straight balls. And Sunil Gavaskar said that on commentary as well. It's just batsmen missing straight balls. How can you say it's the pitch? They're just missing straight balls. It's not the pitch, it's the mind, he said. But to me, there seems an obvious point that they're missing there, which is, why were they missing straight balls? Because test class batsmen don't generally miss straight balls. It happens occasionally, but for almost all of them to be missing straight balls, surely it's because they were expecting the ball to turn and it didn't. So why were they expecting it to turn? Because generally it was turning a huge amount. So then when there was the odd one that didn't turn, that would get them out. So, I'm not saying that they didn't bat badly on it. I think most of them did bat badly on it. It does raise questions, certainly about the England batting, maybe some systemic questions, which we'll get into. But as you say, even the guys who truly are world-class Test batsmen, like Kohli and Rahane and Pujara and Root, they couldn't handle it either. And that does suggest, I don't think we can pretend that the pitch was absolutely fine just because, a few batsmen played bad shots or whatever. Clearly something was going on.
And again, I haven't got the official figures or citations to back this up, but I'm pretty sure that it's been suggested that the pitch actually didn't produce wild turn in the way that, it wasn't as turny as some other pitches have been. But presumably that discrepancy between when the ball did turn, and there was decent turn there clearly, and when it didn't was was clearly very difficult to call for the batsmen. Otherwise, they would have, yeah, as you say, they would have got bat on ball more often. On commentary, you know, there was sort of one ball would go straight on and get a batsman out, and they would say, you know, oh, it's all in the mind, the straight ball, you know, God, it's all in the mind. And then the next ball would be a sharp turn and be like, sharp turn, it's unplayable. And you think like, yeah, I don't know. It just, yeah, to me, and it sounds like to you as well, kind of, I don't know what they, I don't know what were they thinking there with that kind of analysis. I don't know. It just seems slightly bonkers to me.
Well, we'll get into the commentators shortly, but yeah, I think the thing, you know, as Root said, I think the kind of extra factor here was the ball. So I think a combination of the pitch and the pink ball meant that it was just coming on quicker. It was coming quicker off the pitch than they were probably used to or expecting. And I think that was the undoing really of a lot of batsmen. It wasn't necessarily that it was turning more than you might expect. It was probably turning more than you might expect on day one and day two. But, you know, those batsmen can probably cope with that level, that degree of turn. But it was just doing it quicker. So I think that was the key there. You know, on the question of whether it's, you know, that kind of pitch is bad for Test cricket. And we talked about this a bit last time, and the discussion is ongoing, has kind of intensified after this game. I'm still divided on this, because I think on the one hand, it would be hard to argue that day two wasn't entertaining. It was a very entertaining day of cricket. It was like jaw-dropping stuff, wasn't it? It was very exciting, and it grabbed attention, and it got people's attention who wouldn't normally be talking about cricket. This happens quite rarely. You know, it happened when you know, with Ben Stokes at Headingley. It happened with the Cricket World Cup final. It happens, you know, quite rarely that people in my life, like colleagues or friends or whatever, who have no interest in cricket at all, text me and say, oh wow, you must have been enjoying the cricket today, or oh wow, you must be devastated by the cricket today. You know, something like this is obviously on the news. It kind of reaches people in a way that, you know, even England's sort of big win in the first test, you know, that doesn't catch anyone's eye, but something like this is like bonkers. It does. So in terms of whether it's like bad for Test cricket, that seems slightly counterintuitive when people are talking about Test cricket who wouldn't normally be. And as you say, like on balance, I think I'd still rather, well, I definitely would still rather see this game than, you know, a game that lasts 5 days, but on like a flat, dead, you know, feather bed surface where there's nothing happening for the bowlers. Both teams score 500 and it's a draw. And not very long ago, that was the norm in Test cricket in many parts of the world, including India. And that, to me, is what was seriously threatening, you know, seriously jeopardizing the future of Test cricket. So this, I think, is better than that. But on the other hand, you know, as you said right at the beginning, can't help but feel a little bit shortchanged by this. You know, 2 days is not really enough for a Test match. I woke up this morning, you know, it's the weekend now. I was really quite cheesed off that there was no cricket to watch today. You know, as I say, I don't think this was all about the pitch. You know, the reason that it only lasted 2 days, I don't think that was all about the pitch. Both teams batted badly too. But as we've concluded, the pitch must have played some sort of a role. So we don't want boring draws that last 5 days, but we don't want games that last 2 days either. There must be
some
sort of
fussy.
I don't think that is that fussy though. Yeah, I mean, yes, it's, you know, we can be very specific and say we want an exciting game that ebbs and flows and goes right to the final session and has a perfect balance between bat and ball, and that's obviously incredibly difficult to engineer or to sort of prescribe prescribe a pitch for that just is very, very tricky. But I don't think it's too much to ask to look for some sort of happy medium between a 5 day snooze fest and a 2 day, you know, I don't know, what do you call that? 2 day crazy
fest.
Well, as we've mentioned, lots of people have had lots to say about the pitch, with the exception of the TV commentators, who for the most part were notably silent about it, or when they did talk about it, it was generally to say, oh, it's nothing to do with the pitch. It's all in the mind. It's just bad batting. judging from some of your Facebook messages, Tone, I think you've got quite a bit to say about the commentary.
Well, I just think, taken alongside the performance of the third umpire throughout the series, I don't know, it's just not a great production, is it? It's, these are clearly not very knowledgeable people about cricket.
Not very knowledgeable, did you
say? No, they're clearly very knowledgeable, cricket pundits. Sunil Gavaskar, one of the all-time greats. So, but where the kind of, where it just sort of, it all falls down is that there's no discussion or review of anything really of any interest. They just sort of gloss over anything that might be a slightly contentious decision. And that goes either way, really. It's kind of, it's quite frustrating as a viewer, I've found.
Yeah, just to sort of clarify that for anyone who isn't watching, it's very noticeable for us because with the series being on Channel 4 on free-to-air, Channel 4 are just taking the feed from Indian TV. So normally what we'd expect for any away series, India series in the past, Sky would have their own commentary team. So we'd expect, Athers and Nasser and co. But this time we've just got the Indian feed. The first two tests, Nick Knight and Mark Butcher, were there. Mark Butcher in particular I thought was excellent, but they seem to have both flown home. I presume that was agreed before the series rather than that they've been axed.
Moved on, yeah.
Because they did say a few negative things. Graham Swan brought in for these two games, which is hard work. But it is a BCCI production, isn't it? And they are on the payroll of the BCCI. And it does seem at times it comes across almost like state propaganda, doesn't it? In that, they cannot question anything or say anything controversial or negative about the pitch or anything to do with Team India. It's all just very, they're like cheerleaders for the players and the team. And any sort of suggestion that the pitch might not be up to scratch is sort of swatted away. So
there's been quite a few, to be polite, hasty third umpiring decisions or quite close decisions that they just don't go back and look at again and think and discuss or be like, that was pretty close, wasn't it? Let's have a look at it again from another angle. It's just it's really lacking.
Do you think they would though, because it seems like throughout the series any sort of slight controversy with the third umpire, it's against England. Like there's not really been a sort of big controversial moment where an Indian batsman has got the wrong end of the decision, or where England have got the rub of the green. It feels like, I can't think of an example at the moment.
True. The only slightly contentious one was that Root LBW that Kohli got heated about, but that was a DRS, that was a ball tracking quirk rather than anything the third umpire actually did. But yeah.
And did the commentators talk about that?
I can't remember. Probably.
Yeah, so I don't know. It just feels like they're, when it's something that goes against England, or where there's at least something to talk about, where England have made, England could feel miffed. Yeah, they just move on incredibly quickly. They don't want to go back and look at other angles. And I don't know. As you say, it was another controversial game for the third umpire here. This time, Chetachody Shamsuddin was the TV umpire, and there were a couple. There was that Ben Stokes catch towards the end of the first day I think it did go to ground, and it certainly looked like it went to ground, but England were really unhappy because the TV umpire looked at one angle for about 5 seconds and went, yep, that's not out, even though the soft signal was out.
Absolutely woeful. As someone watching from home, it just makes you a little bit angry, or made me angry.
Does make you angry, even though
it's just so stupid. I don't know, like, just bloody look at it a couple of times at least. The first replay hadn't even finished when he was like, oh, it's clearly bounced, not out, reverse your decision. You're like, it's just basic.
Yeah, and I've seen Indian fans sort of saying, oh, why are England upset about that? It clearly went to ground. And, he only needs to see one angle. If it's obvious from one angle, why does he need to look at several? But it just isn't a great look, I think, when it's a home umpire and you see something for a few seconds and go, yep, no, that's fine, that's all I need to see. Because it has a very Well, as you say, when you throw that in with the propaganda commentary and the fact that the BCCI sacked the Chennai groundsman after the first game, I don't know, the whole thing just starts to have a bit of a bad smell, I think. But, I mean, maybe that's just sour grapes. Maybe if England had won this game, we wouldn't be too worried about it. But
yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, you can say clearly that India have been, you know, in the last two tests, obviously much the better team, much the, you know, the individual performances have eclipsed anything that England's team have produced. Obviously fully deserving of two categoric wins. But that yeah, it's not, I don't think it's sour grapes to then alongside that say, well, the third umpiring has been abysmal.
I mean, yeah. It certainly comes across as biased. As I said last time, this is why home umpires just don't work. You know, in his defense, in the third umpire's defense, he might just be very bad at his job. It might not be that he's actually biased, but you can't help but conclude, or you can't help but feel that there is bias at play when something like that happens. It's a bit like, you know, last year on the pod, we talked about that 2001 series between India and Australia. And I know you were like in hysterics. You were laughing about the very end. Is it the very end of the second game?
Yeah, the Harbhajan hat-trick.
Oh, the Harbhajan hat-trick. That's what it is, yeah.
It's like given out before it's pitched.
It's the Indian umpires just like striding down the wicket with his finger up, like basically celebrating with the team. It feels like that. And you can understand why England were upset, even though, as I say, it probably was the right decision. But
exactly.
It needed to be looked at a few times to be sure.
Call me old fashioned, but you know, for me, if you're in a position where you're in any way open to accusations of bias, you've got to lean the other way slightly. You've got to make a real effort to counter any potential claims by actually scrutinizing against your, you know, whatever the perceived bias would be.
Putting in extra attention, or, you know,
exactly, like, you know, you are the host, you should, you know, and that's not to say that you should give generously, you know, decision, you know, you know, the home team or whoever the team, you know, that you're kind of affiliated with or the area or the whatever, you're not going to be giving handouts to the visitors. You want to make it hard for your side, obviously, but yeah, you should kind of be slightly more hospitable at least.
You've just got to work extra hard to avoid the appearance of bias, haven't you? Which is why when you then just race through and only look at one angle for 5 seconds, it isn't a very good look. But as we say, I'm certainly not suggesting that had a couple of third umpire decisions gone the other way, that England would have won that game. You know, they were obviously a long way behind in the end. And in terms of what happened for them on the pitch, a lot of criticism has come their way over their selection. They went into the game obviously with four seamers in Anderson, Broad, Archer and Stokes, and only one spinner in Jack Leach. Moeen Ali having flown home, they left out Dom Bess again. Not a single over was bowled by a seamer in the second half of the game. In the third and fourth innings of the match, only spinners, no seamer bowled an over, which I think is the first time that's ever happened in Test cricket. So is it fair to say, Tone, that they got their selection wrong? And if so, you know, did it have any effect on the game?
See, yeah, I don't think they did get their selection wrong. I don't think they missed, well, arguably they did misjudge, well, they did misjudge the conditions and the, you know, the way the ball would behave and the game would play out. But I don't think they got their selection wrong, because clearly they don't have confidence in the pool of spinners at the moment that you know, Dom Bess has been kind of cast aside now, or sort of sent packing to kind of get a grip on his action and you know, and his line of length and control. They don't really have many options, and obviously clearly they thought the pink ball, the day night test, you know, if it is going to move around a bit more, if we're going to get a bit more out of the ball, you know, for the pace bowlers, then that's the way to go, is to is to stack it. And then obviously that didn't end up coming to pass in the end at all. You know, India obviously chose, you know, picked Ishant and Bumrah. They didn't go with they obviously had more spin options. They had Akshar and Ashwin and Washington Sundar, but in the end obviously both teams only needed two spinners and Joe Root took 5 for 8. So what would an extra spinner have done for England? Not much, probably. I guess they probably could have played an extra batsman is the only thing in hindsight that might have improved things.
Yeah, I think I sort of half agree with you in that I think they did get their selection wrong, you know, in that clearly they didn't need all those seamers. And as you say, that they could have actually just played extra batsmen if that was the, you know, in the end. They might as well have played Dan Lawrence and whoever else instead of Archer and Broad, who did very, very little. So I think they definitely got the selection wrong, but I agree with you that it had absolutely no bearing on the result. You know, it was definitely a bad decision, but it does seem weird that there's so much talk about it, so much focus on it at this point. I listened to about 15 minutes of Tuffers and Vaughan when I was driving home the other day, and you know, that was all they were talking about, was that, you know, it's absolutely catastrophic decision by England to only pick one spinner. Well, you know, it's not as if they would have defended 49 in the fourth innings if only Don Bess was playing. You know, ultimately they bowled India out for 145 in their first innings. What more could they do, really? You know, maybe they could have bowled them out for 20 runs fewer. But yeah, I suppose the only way that it perhaps did have an effect on the result is that it meant that England had a really long tail, because Archer at 8 is 2 or possibly 3 places too high. There's kind of 4 number 11s in there when they pick those 4 guys. So that's possibly the issue. But no one was suggesting that England had got it wrong and they should have played 2 extra batsmen. I suppose it's maybe that the reason that it perhaps is still worth talking about and is still an issue is because it perhaps suggests that the England management are a bit confused, you know, because I do think it was a wrong decision, and it was sort of an obviously wrong decision from the toss where they announced the team. I was like, oh no, because I just think in India, you always need 2 spinners. It's happened so many times to England in the past that they've picked, you know, they've gone in with a seam heavy attack and it never works on the subcontinent. So it just didn't seem like a very good idea, regardless of the conditions. And then when you see the conditions, you think, well, that was a really, you know, that was a really wrong-headed decision. So something like that doesn't inspire much confidence, maybe, for the management making decisions for the rest of the series or going forward more generally. But as you say, it's maybe just that they've completely lost confidence in Don Bess, which is weird. The weird thing about that is that they had confidence in Don Bess when no one else did. And now it feels like I've certainly, my confidence in Don Bess as a fan, as a spectator, has grown recently. And they've lost confidence. It's a bit weird. They were picking him a year ago when everyone was like, why are they picking Don Bess? And now they're like, yeah, you should pick Don Bess. And they're like, no. It's a bit strange, isn't it?
I mean, the thing with Bess, though, is, you know, obviously he took wickets in Sri Lanka, but, you know, at the time, I think one of the fifers, you know, was described as one of the worst 5 wicket hauls you'll ever see. You know, it was really masking, or, you know, somehow getting away with bungling wickets out of rubbish. But which is a real shame, because, you know, clearly England cricket fans would love nothing more than to see, you know, a couple of English spinners bowling really well and doing the business in India in this series. So hopefully Bess can find a way to, yeah, or can find a bit of rhythm and you know, this is.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The end of him.
But yeah, I mean, the problem, as we say, the problem wasn't the bowling, was it? The, you know, the bowlers actually did their job. And by bowlers, I mean Joe Root and Jack Leach. But they actually did their job in bowling India out very cheaply. They got England back into the game after that disastrous first inning. Well, it's not their fault, the bowling attack's fault, that England lost the game. The problem, quite obviously, was the batting. They've now failed to make 200 for five consecutive innings, which is the first time that's happened in well over a century. And when you consider they scored nearly 600 in the first innings of the series, to then fail to make 200 for the next five, you know, I don't think we would have expected that. And in this game, cumulatively across the two innings, they managed 193. So they were 193 for 20 in this game. That's the first time a team has failed to score 200 across the match in a test in India. So it's not great, really, Tony. It's a pretty ugly looking scorecard.
When you put it like that, yeah.
Do we blame it all on the pitch, or the pitch and the ball, or do England have some real concerns about their batting now?
I don't know. It's tough. I mean, we're getting older all the time, obviously, but
it's irrelevant. But yeah,
you know, apart from 2012, when you know, England fought back to win that series, and you know, obviously Cook and Peterson, and there were some big performances. You know, like. England just can't or don't play very well against spin ever, really. So I don't know. Yeah, is it harsh to sort of say, well, you know, to send another troop of batsmen to get slaughtered overseas on spinning pitches and then kind of rip into them? You know, it's always been an issue in our lifetimes and probably, you know, for a long time before. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. It's just it's a bit of a shame. Obviously, these series don't come around very often, and I'm sure you'll bring up the rotation policy in a minute. And it's a shame that England haven't stacked their selection more in favour of this series being, you know, such a marquee series. So yeah, I don't know, but certainly I've got big concerns for the next test. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're right that, you know, England have never played spin well. English batsmen never played spin well. So to some extent, you think, well, it feels almost like that's the natural order of things. But actually, you know, the ECB have got a lot of resource and they don't seem to be doing much to try and tackle that problem. That is a very long-standing problem that everyone knows about. And actually, it's arguably worse now than it's ever been in the sense that, you know, as you say, English batsmen have never done well in those conditions, because they've never had enough exposure to those conditions and pitches like that, and bowlers of that quality, spinners of that quality. But they get even less now because of the structure of the county season, the fact that the games are all kind of shoehorned into a narrow window at the beginning of the season. I think this year there's only, is it like one championship match in July and one in August or something like that, one round of fixtures. When obviously in England, as the summer goes on, it, you know, it starts as being super friendly for seamers. And as the summer goes on, it ought to get better and better for spinners, you know, as after a longer period of hot weather. But that's just not really happening now. So there's not much, there's a lot less opportunity for young English spinners and young English spinners to develop, and for young English batsmen to, and sorry, and B, I should say, for young English batsmen to face spinners and quality spinners and have to deal with that type of bowling. So it is a very long-standing problem, but it's not only not getting better, it's probably getting worse.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at England's last seven results in India, obviously the win a couple of tests ago, but going back to 2016, India have won by 246 runs, 8 wickets, an innings and 36, an innings and 75, 317, and then 10 wickets. So it's like... It's pretty categorical. And I remember at the time, you could probably go back and listen if you're so, you know, such way inclined. I think there were a few caveats about that 2017 tour where England got pretty well hammered, or 2016, 2017 tour. At the time, I remember thinking they're like, oh, England were, you know, it was probably harsh on them. But yeah, it's becoming more difficult to find crumb of hope. Yeah, exactly.
Well, what we saw in this game is just, you know, as we say, the pitch was tough, the ball made it tough. But they seem to have the wrong approach at times and were trying to play off the back foot. You know, that Crawley's first ball dismissal in the second innings, he went right back to a ball that he should have been forward to. Bairstow the same. Johnny Bairstow, thanks for coming. Got off the plane, did his quarantine, a pair in what, about four deliveries or something? It was, yeah, not the best test match anyone's ever had. Is that where the rotation policy goes wrong? You know, we talked about it last week. I sort of feel like it does make sense. Maybe they've got it wrong in terms of the timing of it and when people go home and stuff like that. But I do think it makes sense to give people a break from the bubble environment, especially given how much cricket and test cricket England have to play this year. But is this where it kind of falls down when you bring someone fresh off the plane into a test match in India on a pitch like that against bowlers like that? It's a pretty tall order, really, isn't it?
I think that the rotation thing was well-intentioned. I mean, as others have said, you know, you probably can't really judge it until the end of the year. If England go and win the Ashes and win the World T20, then you probably take that. But obviously, that's you know, there's a lot of work to do to get to that point. I think, as we discussed last week, I think the prioritisation is a bit disappointing. The fact that they haven't, you know, loaded the squad and made sure everyone's there for this series. But I don't know.
They could have rotated them out for the white ball stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it is a unique situation. Just the whole backdrop to international sport and international cricket at the moment. So, you know, I think there has to be a bit of slack there. I don't think, you know, clearly for the ECB as well, this is a new, this is new territory to try and work out how to manage. It's dealing with a problem of their own creation in terms of the schedule and how much they've laid on for their players this year. But it is it's new territory to wade through. So, to a certain extent, I think there's got to be a bit of leeway and a bit of understanding.
What about India then, Tony? It's only a couple of weeks ago that they were fairly outclassed in that first test in Chennai. That feels like a long time ago now, or at least it does to me. They've turned the series on its head since then. But the weird thing is that I don't know that they had an especially good game here. As we say, they got skittled out very cheaply in their batting first innings. They only were chasing 49 in the second inning, so the batsmen didn't really show much in this game at all. Their seamers barely bowled, so it was literally Ashwin and Akshar Patel and that's it. But that, as it turned out, that was all they needed.
I think it's quite hard to make any kind of real assessment on it. As you say, you know, it was a couple of bowlers, you know, obviously that they, you know, Akshar and Ashwin bowled 30 overs non-stop in England's second innings, and then obviously Washington Sundar came in and bowled four balls. So exactly, it was kind of on their shoulders really, and you know, what more can you say? Obviously Akshar has started very, very well in his test career, obviously in favorable circumstances, but you know, it's tough to take too much away from him. And you know, Ashwin is clearly an elite operator, and England having a lot of problems with him.
Well, he went to 400 wickets in this game, took his 400th wicket. As you know, Tone, milestones, one of my favourite things. But it was much talked about. He did it in his 77th test, which makes him the second fastest bowler to get to 400 wickets after Murali. And I do wonder, Tone, whether he is underrated. What do you think? Maybe not underrated in India, but is he underrated by England fans? You know, certainly in my case, I do think of him as a very good bowler. But I was looking at it and that, you know, him going to 400 wickets has flagged up a few things about his stats, and his stats do stack up quite favorably with some of the best bowlers of all time. He was the quickest to 250 wickets, to 300 wickets and to 350 wickets. He's the second quickest to 400 wickets, and his bowling average now is below 25. He's got a better bowling average than Shane Warne. So I do just wonder whether we don't give him enough credit. And it could be partly, it's almost like a corollary with the way that Indian fans feel about Jimmy Anderson. We talked about this after the first game, that they, you know, very wittily call him Jimmy Clouderson. You know, this idea that he's like a home track bully. Well, maybe Ashwin maybe that is something that could be levelled at Ashwin, or at least maybe there's a perception of that amongst England fans. He has 278 of those 400 wickets were taken in India. But again, like Anderson, he's got a very respectable record away from home too. So I don't know. What do you think, Tone?
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. Those kind of stats have a habit of creeping up, don't they? And, you know, you sort of, you have a preconception of a player and it's kind of, it is hard to break out of that. But clearly the kind of numbers and the territory he's putting himself into, yeah, you know, he is part of the conversation now in terms of kind of modern great bowlers, really, and modern great spinners. I think part of why he perhaps is underrated slightly is the way he came through as an IPL, you know, came through as a sort of 2020 player. And I don't know, for quite a while, you pigeonholed him, or you know, you sort of think about him alongside the likes of Narine. And it's kind of this like sort of bits and pieces T20 player who's, you know, the kind of with all the mystery balls and the kind of the variety. Whereas actually since then and over the last decade, he's really, he's really kind of clearly established himself as a full blown kind of test pedigree, you know, elite player. So perhaps it's worthwhile exercise to put him in that context, I think, and perhaps give him the dues that he's now earned.
Yeah, just spend some time this weekend just reflecting on Ashwin. obviously his record at home is better than his record away. Also, his record against England and his record against Australia isn't quite as good as his career record. He averages more than 30 against both. So, you know, that could again be contributing to why we as England fans, it's a little bit like VVS Latchman didn't have a very good record against England. I think England fans don't tend to think of Latchman automatically as like a modern great, whereas Australian fans quite often do because he had an amazing record against them. So who, you know, it does make a difference where your best performances have been. It is definitely the case that he's putting himself in the conversation. Another player to reach a milestone in this game was Ishant Sharma, who was playing his 100th test. And it's a similar thing that I want to raise here. I just wonder, with Ishant Sharma, and I'm specifically talking about us, whether we don't give him enough airtime, because we never seem to talk about Ishant Sharma. I might be wrong. I haven't gone back and listened to every episode, but it does feel like Ishant must have maybe the lowest ratio of number of test appearances to number of mentions on the World Cricket Show. I feel like this is about the first time we've ever talked about him, but yet he's played 100 tests. It feels like he's managed to have a lengthy test career for one of the best teams in the world, despite, in my view, never quite nailing it in test cricket. I can't sort of remember that many sort of standout Ishant performances over those 100 tests. But maybe I just didn't notice, or my memory's bad. I don't know, Tom. What do you think? Is that a bit unfair?
Well, no, I think that does sound fair. I mean, you know, his numbers are fairly modest, aren't they? In terms of, you know, if you are going to, for a player who's had that kind of longevity, it's impressive that he's stuck around in the way he does. And obviously he's played a role, or he's clearly been backed to play a role in, as you say, you know, one of, you know, the sort of giant of international cricket for so long. And, you know, clearly probably when he started his career, you know, India weren't really known for their pace bowlers. You know, that's changed slightly, and it got to a point where India actually had some of the best pace bowlers in the world, and he's endured that as well. So I agree. And I think, you know, again, a good moment to give him a bit of World Cricket Show airtime. And which he'll be thrilled with, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's the ultimate accolade, really, isn't it? That's what it's all been about for him. He'll probably retire now. All right, where do you see this going then, Tane, with one test left to play? I said last time momentum's not a thing. I don't know if I'm regretting that now. Is there a universe, do you think, where England bounce back and win this final test? And second part of this question, are we living in that universe?
Yeah. How many universes are there in the world? Like, in the world?
That's a weird question.
I'm going to cut. Thank God I'm editing this. it's Saturday morning.
How many
it's not
universes are there in the world?
It's not a day for intellectual debate, is it? Saturday.
It's a day to think about Ashwin. We've been over this.
Yeah, true. I don't know. Yeah, difficult to see England doing much, but I'm more than happy to be surprised. I wonder sort of one thing as well, you know, about the situation that kind of clearly the impact of maybe the crowds have had in the last couple of tests. Certainly the last test, you know, a new stadium, but you know, and a huge stadium that wasn't obviously completely full, but the noise and the kind of relentless noise and the oral pressure, if you could call it that, that must exert on a team doing pretty poorly, a visiting team doing pretty poorly, in this case, England. I don't know, that must be quite tricky. It's not an easy atmosphere to kind of settle or to fight back in or settle into any rhythm in, I would think.
Yeah, well, especially when it's like a new thing all over again, I suppose, isn't it? Maybe sort
of exactly.
More kind of hyper aware of the crowd than they normally would be.
Just on the noise front, God damn it, Rishabh Pant is annoying behind the stumps. Like, I loved watching him bat in Australia. That innings was fantastic. And, you know, I'm not writing him off as a player or a person, but he's got to stop cackling like some sort of whatever. But it's really annoying. And that would really annoy me as a batsman.
It's certainly in our six-a-side football league, any kind of reaction like that from any player that we're playing against, I'm just absolutely boiling with anger instantly.
Yeah. It seems to me to be not, you know, it's just not the done thing. I don't know. I don't think you should laugh at someone's downfall. Like, be excited, shout, scream, you know, obviously, you know, appeal vociferously, but don't giggle and cackle. It's, it would really wind me up.
All right. Well, I can't see England coming back in this one either. As much as you say, I'd love to be surprised, and I don't think momentum's a thing, but the way they've batted so far, it's impossible to see where they're going to get enough runs from, really. But who knows, you know, maybe Joe Root will pull something out of the bag, maybe someone else will pull something out of the bag, but I can't necessarily see that we're going to be sat here next week talking about an England win and a 2-0 series draw. But who knows, we'll be back either way with a podcast to do it, but that's going to be it for this one. Have you enjoyed yourself today, Tone?
Yeah, it's been good.
How's your lockdown going?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, not too bad. Pretty, I suppose, pretty fortunate in many ways. But the sun is out now. We went for a run yesterday, a little trot along the coast here in Guernsey.
I saw you yesterday for a socially distanced run.
Yeah, which was very pleasant. It's been all right, isn't it? It's been, we're getting there. I think the whole world's getting there, hopefully. Well, some of it.
Yeah, it feels like there's a bit more optimism around now. So fingers crossed. But I hope everyone out there listening to this is safe and well and is feeling optimistic. It sounded like you were going to say something there.
Right. I echo those sentiments.
Just echo those extremely profound sentiments. all right, well, we're going to be back soon with another World Cricket Show. But until then, do get involved on the internet. We're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. I'm sure you can find us there. So if you want to get in touch, you can do it through those social media channels, or you can send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. And if you enjoy the show, do write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, because that is a great way of letting other people know about the show and, bringing new people to us, which is what we're all about. But yeah, you got anything left to say, Tone, or are you done?
Well, I'll cut it anyway, so...
Are you wanting to wrap this up very quickly?
Because no one will know what I'm about to say because it won't make the edit.
Okay. All right. Well, stay in school, everyone. And we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Bye-bye. Take care. Cheery.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.